The Burgerkrieg Productions 15 Minutes of Fame podcast features lead singer and resident wildman, Johnny, of the Connecticut-based hardcore punk band Cry Havoc. Here's their song Lethal Injection.
So we are nearing the bittersweet end of this season, but I have a very special guest from Connecticut. It's Johnny Miller from Cry Havoc, the explosive, we'll call it frontman, I guess, if that's how you want to, you know, the resident screamer and or lyricist from Cry Havoc. So Johnny, welcome to the conversation/podcast, man. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Yeah, frontman is cool. Resident screamer is cool. Anything but singer, because I don't sing. I've been called a lot worse things than frontman. So I'll take frontman. Frontman's great.
Hell yeah! And
thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here. Thanks for making the time for me and all that.
Dude, absolutely. You were on that list. I know we talked briefly at Scottish Dave's. You were on the list, so I'm glad we were able to kind of get this all pulled together prior to the end of the season. So, in your opinion, you know, what qualities do musicians in the Northeast United States, and I guess the New England portion of the U.S., what qualities do they possess that you have found that make them so special or unique?
I think, you know, it's funny because I was just thinking about this the other day. I really think a lot of it just has to do with like a regional attitude, if you will,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, you can break that down into little microcosms and stuff like that, like cities or states and stuff, you know? I mean, I think obviously the biggest example would be, you know, within New England, you know, you want to look at hardcore, you know, New York hardcore and like Boston hardcore, very different in a way, but very similar at the same time, because it's clearly all hardcore,
mm-hmm.
you know? You know, like New York hardcore, that is wholly New York. It has a certain style and a certain sound and a tone. And as much as that has been kind of replicated by other bands all over the country and the world, honestly, at this point, I mean, you still can't deny that New York has its own sound. And I think Boston has its own sound. I think even California, of course, has its own
sound. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know, would you ever, like, when I listen to Group Sex by the Circle Jerks or something like that, I'm not like, oh, wow, that sounds like it definitely could have come out of D.C. at the same time. Like, no way. The Circle Jerks are purely California. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know why that is or what that is. But I mean, would you have ever expected to hear a band like Minor Threat and be like, oh, those dudes are probably from like Boston or Texas or maybe Detroit where Negative Approach is from? Like, no, like that is a D.C. centric thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of that has to do with region. As far as New England as a whole, and you know, it's tough. It's tough to say, but it definitely has its own vibe its own style in a way, you know? I don't know if maybe it's being regional, it's the weather, you know what I mean? Like California doesn't have snowstorms and blizzards and that god-awful, rainy, muddy, gross February and March that we have. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think it's really, really has something to do with the region and just kind of the way of life and stuff like that, you know? Not to say that hardcore punk bands from New England have it tougher than anywhere else, because, I mean, it's fucking tough times for anybody anywhere, no matter where you live. But yeah, I don't know. It definitely is a thing unto its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what that is, I really couldn't put my finger on. It's very interesting. Like, I always wonder about that, like regional regional, how different regions can affect the sound or just the attitude or how a band functions.
I'm wondering if weather even, like, could you imagine if you took a, like, listen to a band that lives in Alaska and that one part of Alaska that gets what, like fucking X amount of weeks of darkness per year.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And think about how that affects someone, not only from just your regular standpoint. I wake up, I go to work or whatever. Think about how that affects your artistic and creative process, where it's like, I have X amount of weeks where I'm in the dark. Right. And then
exactly.
what is your artwork as a result of that type of thing? So,
right. Yeah.
That's
an excellent point. Cause I mean, like, where did the huge surge of black metal come from?
Exactly.
Norway, Denmark.
Exactly.
I mean, like, it's nothing but, you know, I mean, like, those guys talk about, they're like, you know, we wanted the recording quality of our records to sound brutal,
mm-hmm.
and abrasive, because that's our environment we live in, is brutal and unforgiving and abrasive. And like, I read that, or I saw that in a documentary or something somewhere, and it blew my mind for a minute. And I'm like, you willingly, like, wanted the quality of your recording to sound harsh to match the environment you live in. Like, that blew my mind. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, holy shit. Like,
that's crazy.
Like, Norway sounds brutal, dude, in the winter. And like, you listen to some black metal. It's like, yeah, this came from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
God damn.
It's insane.
Shit, you know,
it's insane.
You know, I think weather definitely is a big part of it. I think that's part of the whole regional thing. Now a band can look to an aesthetic, like, you know, we're going for like a DC 89 Revolution Summer Discord kind of sound, you know, or we're going for kind of like that early midnight or early 90s, like New York hardcore sound, this or that, you know, when it was before, because we, you know, by virtue of the internet, when Spotify and streaming and stuff like that, we can listen to those things and draw inspiration and do this and that, you know, whereas, you know, Suicidal Tendencies sounded like Suicidal Tendencies because that's just where they were from and how they grew up and their surroundings. That's what they sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
Agnostic Front sounded the way it sounded. Fugazi sounded the way it sounded. And it wasn't like they didn't look to an aesthetic or a style to be like, listen, that's my favorite band. That's where I'm getting a lot of my influence from, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that just in those times, you could really see kind of those flagpole tent pole bands for those regions at those times, you know, where it was just, they were just what they were just by virtue of where they were and who was in those bands at that time. You know, it's a real interesting thing. Like, I could never imagine a band like Suicidal Tendencies coming out of anywhere but Venice Beach, California. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, not in a million years, maybe Florida, maybe, you know?
Well, I think a lot of it too, you know, you touching on like your point about the internet, one thing that has helped and I think harmed is at one point in time, you couldn't just click a button and be listening to something. The only way you were listening to it is if you were getting it on a comp, you went to a show, or you were fortunate enough to be able to order the album itself, or you found it at a record shop, right? So,
yeah, or somebody's older brother had,
yes,
it, and they put it on a tape for you.
Exactly.
You tape that tape, you know, yeah.
You exactly. You burn the CDs, whatever era you came from, there was a certain, yeah, point in time where it was very limited, your access to it and exposure to it. So I think now, you know, to your point, it's very easy to go towards an aesthetic, whereas I feel like at one point in time it was a little bit more pure, right? And you were a, yeah, product of your direct influences, but also, you know, your region, like using the example of like Reagan Youth, it's like their kind of bizarre or strange take on punk rock, but also very societally aware and politically aware of kind of what was happening around them. Obviously, New York City being a city that from lore, whether it's, you know, the Ramones lore or whatever, New York City was not an awesome place for a long time. It was kind of a shithole, no, right? So
it was kind of terrifying.
It was kind of terrifying,
and
yes.
And I think it kind of gets glamorized and romanticized in a way where it's just like, oh yeah, the big bad LES. And it's just like, dude, like if you really listen and talk to those guys and watch the documentaries and stuff, that shit sounds scary as fuck.
Yeah.
Like that shit is fucking terrifying. Like you know what I mean? Like you look at, I look at documentary footage and videos and stuff, and it's just like, oh yeah, like LES and fucking hardcore. And it's like, oh, that's fucking awesome and shit. And then I'm like listening to Vinny Stigma talk about like burned out buildings and gangs, and it literally looks like a war zone.
Yes.
And I'm like, dude, that sounds fucking terrifying.
Terrifying.
You know, as I sit in my living room with my Wi-Fi, like, you know what I mean? like holy fucking shit.
Well, see, that's a good point, because you know? I had this conversation. I can't remember who I was talking to about it, but it was a recent interview that I did, and we were chatting about how the scene has gotten that basically. Oh, it was, I'm sorry. I was talking with Mike from Vandalizer. He's a New York City based kind of metal band. And he kind of came up through like the mid to late 80s, that kind of that time frame as far as like playing music and being active. And we were talking about just how things have changed to where you use the example of like Vinny talking about like, yeah, burned out buildings and gangs. And we were doing DIY shit, but we were also kind of fearing for our lives and having to fight, like actually fight people.
Right.
We were survive. Yeah. And we were talking about, we're talking about the scene in particular. Now you don't have to do a lot of those things that you did have to do.
No.
Right.
No.
And I think it's both good and bad. I think there's, you can always find some silver lining to it, and nothing against like people who like, you know, write music in their bedrooms and release music from their bedrooms. Like that's all well and good. But I think what it means now to say I'm in a band that's moderately successful, we play shows, we release music, to say that now holds a different kind of weight than it was to say that in the late 70s, the early 80s, and the early 90s. Like, it's changed because it's much easier.
Oh, as all things do, yeah.
Right. And that's not even a negative, right? It's good and bad. Do I want to go through and drive, like, a piece of shit vehicle halfway across the country? Sure. Would I rather take a vehicle that I know that it's going to get me from point A to point B? Probably, right? You know, do I want to sleep in a fucking truck stop worrying about lot lizards and fucking venereal diseases? Not really.
Yeah.
Would
I
do it if I had to? Fucking yes.
Absolutely.
But you can be smart. I feel like now the difference is you can be smarter in harnessing fucking some of this shit to the best of your ability, right? Doing research before launching into shit. So it's good and bad. You just got to take the good with the bad, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's it's that evolution, you know what I mean? It's I and like as far as like, because I mean, like we can't deny it. The internet has been the biggest thing of all of that. I mean, you know, so it's like I get how it can be really easy for people who did all that stuff, all that brutal road dog, no GPS, no, you know, internet, no cell phones. You know what I mean? Like literally booking a tour on a payphone or something, driving 14 hours to a venue where you talked to a guy 4 months ago about the show and hoping that it works out. You know, I can get how those guys can look at bands, you know, like ours that have come up not having to do all of that and be like, man, you guys got it so easy. You know, I get that. I understand. But there's a whole new level of challenges, you know, that you face now in this era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now with the accessibility and the fact that, you know, not, you know, to use broad terms, anybody can release music. Cause I mean, anybody kind of can, but you know what I mean? You know, there's such an oversaturation.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, on a given day in the summer or something like that, let's just say, I mean, there might be 3 to 4 shows happening in one, if you're in a smaller state, smaller-ish like Connecticut, you know, there might be 3 or 4 shows all happening, all punk shows, not like 3 or 4 shows of different genres, you know? So it's like, there is a level where, you know, yes, we don't legitimately have to worry about being attacked and murdered because we're dressed punk by, you know, cops or fucking rednecks or whatever, you know, like without a doubt. So there's a lot of things that we do, a lot of adversity we don't have to face, you know, with people of our generation, I guess, of bands, you know, but there's always that ebb and flow. There's that that good and bad? Like, has the internet like made it possible for all these great positive things? Absolutely. Does it also entail a lot of negatives and a lot of bullshit? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I think, just a matter of mitigating and navigating and avoiding the pitfalls. You know what I mean? Like, one part of me is just like, there's so much stuff on the, there's so much, like, there's just so much music now. You know what I mean? People like you said, and not to disparage people that sit in their room and write music.
No, not at all.
Do your thing. You're doing it. I'm not. Right on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, go for it. But at the same time, it's just, there's so much out there. Like, there's just so much out there now, you know, but at the same time, somebody might be, you know, you might be like, dude, John, check out this band. They're awesome. And you send me a Spotify, like, it might be my new favorite band. That's right. Great. That's so cool.
There's
an up and a downside to it, you know?
Exactly. I think the ability to, and this is something that I think has been very helpful, you know, with the internet, with bands in particular, or individual artists, they've kind of leveled the playing field a little bit in the sense that you can put anything out streaming, within, you know, you record it and then you put it out, you can get it out in a day. You can push it to Bandcamp, right, and it's available instantly. So in that regard, it's like, it's helped kind of galvanize a lot of artists that, in my opinion, I think that might not have necessarily done it if they were like, well, I have to go through all these different hoops. So in that sense, like, it's nice because you can do that for a relatively low price, right? You're not like, well, yeah, I have to press a CD and then I have to get it, but send it, you know, like, I don't have to do all the other things that at one point in time, this is how it was done. Now, on the flip side, it does, you use the term oversaturate. I think the thing that constantly blows my mind is if you and I, and let's say every person that we knew, if we sat down right now and tried to listen to all of the music that has been released in the last 10 years, it would be impossible for us to do that. Theoretically, it would be impossible.
I mean, 10 years, 5 years.
Five years.
I mean, it's,
yeah, exactly.
It's, if not even less, I mean, it's insane.
So,
and there's the good and the bad to that. Like, you know, like,
exactly. Exactly. It's good.
There might be some real
bad
gems in there, but there might be a lot of BS too. You know.
Well, and that's one thing I've really been thankful for. There's a couple labels in particular, Mom's Basement Records, more Ramones core type stuff, and Metal Assault Records. Obviously, a little bit more metal, but tinging towards like kind of your classic like 80s type. Like speed metal, stuff like that. Both those,
like thrash kind of stuff. Yeah.
Sure, exactly. And the one thing I appreciate about both of those labels, I've ordered stuff from them, Mom's Basement, a number of times. They're getting back into like comps, and I know,
yes,
I know when you and I like were kind of growing up, like whether it was the Epitaph stuff, the Fat Records like stuff, like compilations were huge. That's how I was able to hear like a lot of really cool stuff, like the Punk-O-Rama shit. Like that's how I was able to hear a bunch of shit before being able to dive in. So I think it's really cool that labels are doing that. And I'm sure they've always done it, but I just feel like it wasn't necessarily something that I saw a lot of until moderately recently, actually like, you know, getting them again when I would place orders.
Yeah.
And I find that really fascinating because even in a day in which, you know, it's all about the streaming, it's all about instant access, you can still discover a number of great fucking bands, and labels are like, yeah, like I don't think the compilation will ever die.
No.
I think it's a really, I don't know, like despite all this stuff, it's like you still have something like that persists through, you know, and it helps,
absolutely,
you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I agree 100%. Like, I think kind of like in quote unquote our era, the comp was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, the Punk-O-Ramas, the Give Them the Boots,
mm-hmm,
the Victory Records comps. I mean, even going all the way back, you have the Revelation Records, The Way It Is comp. Those compilations were huge. And I mean, I even when I first really started getting into punk and stuff like super heavy, I bought this. It was at like a Newbury Comics. It was a Newbury Comics, and it was like a 4 CD box set, and each CD had like 20 something tracks on it, and it was like $15. It was like $15. And it was like the punk generation, which sounds like super corny now, but like 16-year-old me, I got a 4-CD box set that was just chock full of all the British punk. Like it had, you know, it had GBH, the Addicts, the Angelic Upstarts, the Workers, 999, Blitz, Foreskins, the Business, Chaos UK, the Exploited, the UK Subs. I mean,
that's awesome.
To us now, it might be kind of corny, but like I said, to 16-year-old me, this was like a holy grail.
Yeah,
you know. And I mean, at the time, we still had the Punkaramas and the Give Them the Boots, which were amazing. So it's have those companion piece that like, here's kind of what's happening right now, and then here's kind of some of like the classics, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then like I said, going back to even like Revelation Records, the Way It Is comp that had Gorilla Biscuits and Breakdown and Warzone, Bold, Youth of Today, it was like the comps were so important, and those did go away. But there was that period throughout the late 90s and maybe even into the early 2000s when the comps were like $5, it's got 30 songs on it, go crazy. Like I found out about some of my favorite bands through those, you know, and they were huge at the time. And I think that also has to do with the CD boom itself. Like,
yeah,
hey, we can put 30 songs on this, and it only costs $2 to make these things, so we can sell them for $5 and make a killing. And they did, because I bought them, and I was like, I like every band on this. I got to go buy every one of their records, you know, and I did. You know, it worked.
It's definitely one of those things. I find it very interesting. You know, I've had this conversation with some of my buddies about how, like, specifically to, like, kind of our generation, it's like we've lived through multiple mediums. So, like, I know growing up, my parents still were getting cassettes when I was younger.
Yep.
And then, but basically CDs and cassettes at the same time, they were pretty much purchasing those hand in hand.
Yeah.
And then it went pretty much just to CDs. And then for a brief period, I just remember like my stepdad, like buying shit off Apple, like Apple Music, individual tracks and stuff. Right. And now we're kind of back to vinyl records, right, as being kind of a preferred medium, right? I've been buying fucking vinyl records for the last 18 years of my life, right, and CDs and cassettes. I find it fascinating that like our generation kind of has lived through multiple, I don't want to say fads, but mediums in which the
peaks and valleys,
peaks and valleys, and you know, I don't know if that will ever purely die out, even with the advent of streaming essentially being the current ruler, right? Like, yes, I enjoy having the ability to get onto fucking Spotify and fucking look up something and I can listen to it in my car on Bluetooth or whatever. But with that being said, it's like, I also value physically owning a copy. And I think that is somewhat a project or a product of our generation, you know, and discovering how we discovered music, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look at it this way. We're in the streaming era, right? Or this last few years, it was like everything's streaming. There's going to be, no one's going to buy records. They're not even going to produce them anymore. The CD is dead, but vinyl's been dead. It's all about digital music and blah, 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 blah. You know, and then look at like the last 5 years. Right now, vinyl records are so fucking popular that all the vinyl plants in the US have told people, don't place an order. We're not even going to start pressing it until 2022.
Mm-hmm. It's insane.
The streaming era is the wave of the future. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just, it's insane. I mean, if, cause like me personally, I'm like a technological Neanderthal. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Like, I have to have my daughter help me figure out how to do things. I'm stupid. I'm old. I don't understand it. I'm not a tech person at all. You know, Spotify, however, though, I work on average between 12 to 14 hours a day, 5 days a week. So like something like Spotify for me, when I'm just working, I'm like, oh my God, I can listen to music. I can listen to podcasts. This is amazing. This rules and everything. But when I'm at home, I am not listening to fucking Spotify. Mm. I've got thousands of CDs that I listen to. You know what I mean? And that's what I listen to. Like,
right.
Driving is part of my job. Every single day, I've got four or five CDs that I toss in my backpack that I listen to while I'm driving. I could just plug, you know, my phone into the little input jack here and listen to Spotify through the car stereo, but I don't want to do that. I've got my records, you know, I've got music,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, let's see, what do I have today? Today I have Let's Go by Rancid, The New Lexicon by Painted Black, One False Move by The Freeze, and the new Converge record, Blood Moon. This is today's listening while I'm driving.
That's awesome.
I don't know why I felt the need to share that, but there you go.
Well, no, it's I find that very fascinating. So,
but for all the streaming and stuff like that, you know, I'm still grabbing. What do I want to listen to today? Do I want to listen to this man? Oh no, I want to listen to The Freeze. Ooh, oh, I just got that Converge. I want to definitely check that out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've listened to it four or five times already since it went on to streaming. I'm still buying the record.
Right.
I want to buy the record. It goes next to all my other Converge records. That's what, you know what I mean? Like, I can't physically sit here and on streaming, I can't look at the artwork.
Mm-hmm. Look at the liner notes.
And the way out.
You know, like.
Look at the liner notes and the lyrics and stuff like that. I want to physically hold that because when I used to buy records when I was a teenager, when I was a kid, I bought that shit at the record store. I went straight home. I put it on. I sat on my bed. I took the lyric sheet out. I looked at the artwork. I read along to the lyrics to all the songs. I looked at the pictures of the bands. I read the thank you list. I looked at what shirts they were wearing mm-hmm. and stuff. Like, that stuff's important. You miss that. You don't get that with digital music and stuff. And digital music and streaming has its place. I'll be the first to say it does. Because what I usually do is I'll be like, who's this band everyone keeps talking about? I keep seeing people talking about them all the time. So I can go on Spotify and I can check it out. And sometimes I'm like, holy shit, this band is awesome. I get what all the hype is about, but I go buy that record if I like it that much, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's like, to me, has become the way, that's like being able to like take it for a test drive or a taste test, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Where I can be like, oh, this is really fucking good. All right, I'm going to order this shit right now, you know? And I think people like us where we had that first connection with music in that physical format, buying that tape or getting that dub tape your friend made you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I hear something I like, and if I like it that much, I want to go buy it because that's how I connected to music, was listening to that record or that CD or that tape and sitting down and looking at it and listening to it and really making an experience out of it. So streaming, it's cool. I can hear it. But my connection with music is having it and looking at it and holding it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it does have those uses, like I said, for me, where I can listen to records all night while I'm at work, you know? But I still have my records because that's that connection I have to them. And like you said, it is funny. We have gone through those peaks and hot spots where, you know, remember, well, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago when nobody cared about vinyl at all.
Oh, dude.
Like when vinyl was like, on clearance in record shops were like nothing because nobody wanted it. And now it's like the hottest thing ever. And I'm like, why are you guys acting like vinyl's a new thing? Vinyl's always been a thing.
it's border.
It's so funny to me.
It's borderline. Cause I agree. It's very funny. And like, I see some of this stuff, like it doesn't matter if you go to like a record show, like a record fair, or even stopping at like the some of the local joints, you see the way in which things are being priced, and it's almost it's almost sickening. Like, when I was in high school, I was able to go to our local Salvation Army, and I had I inherited my father's records. That's what kind of got me started when I was young, and then it pretty much progressed to like, all right, you know, I'm going to the local Salvation Army. But like, I was able to get all my early, like, you know, my Blondie. I pulled a fucking Ramones End of the Century. Like, I was able to get my staple stuff for like $1 a piece,
$2 a piece.
Exactly.
$2.
My B-52 self-titled was fucking $1. You know, like, I was able to get a lot of this, a lot of the cornerstones of my collection, like, cheap. So now it's like you go and you see fucking
Evo and Talking Heads.
Exactly.
Probably awesome stuff for $1 at the flea market or the Salvation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dude, flea markets in particular were fantastic for that. But you go to some of these places now and it's like Madonna, True Blue, $15. It's like, I literally got this for pennies, you know, fucking 10 years ago. So how is
Or somebody gave me, hey, do you want
exactly
this stack of vinyl? I have no use for it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people gave away records.
It's insane.
Gave them away.
And
I'm sorry, not to cut you off. And mark my words, give it a few years, and I wonder if we'll see this same renaissance we're seeing with vinyl now with CDs.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because
like, I wonder if CDs right now or within a couple of years, now that vinyl has like is so backed up because it's so hot right now, I wonder if in a few years CDs now will be what vinyl was back then when we were talking about it, like we're talking about it now.
And that's a very good point. I think where CDs have the leg up on vinyl is exactly why CDs kind of took over for vinyl initially, at least to what I can tell, is A, it doesn't take up as much space. B, you were able to be portable with it. And then obviously having it in your cars, you know, Walkmans, when I say portable, I mean like, you know, your Discman type shit. So it's like,
for shipping.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I don't have to worry about my CDs getting dropped off by the mailman in the summer and worry about them getting ruined.
Fucking warped because they shoved it in your goddamn mailbox or whatever.
Yeah. It's hot when you're on tour. You know, I can't imagine how bands tour with vinyl in the summer. It boggles my mind.
It's insane.
You know?
So I think you're onto something. I wouldn't be surprised if we do see kind of it come full circle again, where the CD is now coveted. I got a newer car. It's fucking 2017, but I got a new car. Like,
doesn't even have a CD player.
No, it does. It does. And that specific car that I picked out was the last year that they put it in the car. And I was ecstatic because it's like, I'm the same way. I like to travel with my CDs. It's like, I'll rotate them out. I think I can fit like 7 or 8 cases in my little middle console. So like, I'll cycle those out every once in a while, but like, I'm the same way. It's like, I still haven't reset this from last week, but like right now it's like I work from home. So like I have a little CD player in here, and it's like, I've got Paul Abdul, Forever Your Girl, Screeching Weasel, Teen Punks and Heat, Huntington's, Get Lost, Mord Wolf, Machine War, and Limp Bizkit, $3 Bill, y'all. So it's like, I am very much the same way, where I like having things that I can listen to for a day, for a couple of days, rotate it out. And it helps keep not only like I'm always listening to music, but also there's something special to the fact that it's like I'm listening to my music, you know, like my collection or you know, CDs from my collection. That is just, I don't know. There's just something special to that, because I can sit and pull out, like you said, pull out the liner notes, pull out the lyric sheet, whatever, look at the pictures. It's just, you miss out on a lot of that with the streaming shit. And I understand, yes, people can access it instantly. They can fucking PayPal you and download the digital copies of it, whatever. But I don't know. It's not the same to me. You know, it never was.
Yeah. And right. And so, okay. So this will be interesting. I like to have this conversation with people. Humor me. So how many times has you been in the car with your buddy, or you guys are hanging out or whatever, and they hand you their iPod, or they hand you, or you open Spotify and you're like, hey, just pick something, put on whatever you want. And you sit there and you scroll, and you scroll, and you don't know what to play.
Oh, dude, it's very real.
Thousands, you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's alphabetized. Like, you're just scrolling through A, B, scroll all the way down to S. I don't know. Just pick something, you know? Like, and you just don't know what to play. But when you stand in front of your bookshelves or whatever, and you're like, no, I'm grabbing this fucking, this is what I'm going to listen to. And if you're in your car, you've got those 6 or 7 CDs. That's what you're listening to.
Yeah.
That's all you've got.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like today, like I said, I had to sit, I took 10 minutes, like a few minutes, like I always do. And I said, okay. Okay, The Freeze, move. Ooh, Painted Black. Oh, you know what? I haven't listened to Let's Go by Rancid in a wicked one. Yeah, what's it? And I'm going to grab that new one because I just got it in the mail the other, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what I'm listening to those. It's not like, oh, I kind of want to hear this. Oh, you know what? I want to listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm not feeling this. I want to hear something like this. I don't know. You know, how many times did you do like that Spotify Wrapped thing? And it's just like, you listen to these 5 records. for 30% of your listening. Like,
it's,
I follow that many hundreds of artists and I'm still sitting here listening to these same five fucking records with all of this music at my fingertips and I'm listening to the same 10 records. Like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Like, what am I doing? But when you physically, like you said, you have those 7 or 8 CDs in your car or something, that's what you have to listen to because that's all you've got.
Mm-hmm. And that's,
and it, I think that that's very interesting to me. It's like, here's my iPod. It has 1,100 artists on records on it. Okay. I don't know what to play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's too much. I feel like sometimes it's like, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it's like too many things. It's like when you get a menu at a restaurant and it's one of those places like a diner that can make literally anything. You know,
or like a fucking Cheesecake Factory or something, and there's like 15 pages of things.
Yeah, and but you go to a burger place, and there's like, here's our 5 kinds of burgers. Like, oh shit, okay, like I gotta pick one of these. You know,
exactly.
There's an attachment to those physical, to those records. You know,
you reminded me of something very interesting. So when my buddies and I, when we all first started like driving, if I'm not mistaken, every single one of us, maybe myself, because my first one didn't have, so my first car, I didn't have anything in it. It had a radio. There was no fucking, there was no tape deck. There was nothing. It was a radio. So I remember, with that exception, all my other buddies, they either had just a tape deck or they had a CD player and a tape deck. So what we would do is we would then raid, because again, no one gave a shit about cassette tapes at all. So we could go and get, you know, we, all of us had like pretty legit cassette tape collections. My second vehicle ended up having a tape deck in it finally. But that's, we had like tapes were for a brief period of time. They were a big deal because that's either all that we had or, you know, you'd get the fucking booklet, you know, the CD holders above the visor that could hold fucking 7 or 8 CDs, whatever. But the tapes in particular, like there would be a shoebox in the back seat of someone's car that would have fucking, mm-hmm. you know, 25, 30 tapes or whatever. And I think with something like that, I think that although yes, from a space perspective, or whatever, space, room, carbon footprint, whatever the fuck you want to say it, or however you want to categorize it, yes, you can keep all this music on your phone. It's not taking up room in your car. You're not worrying about fucking things getting broken. But at the end of the day, like that was always a big deal, right? All right, it's fucking Travis's turn to pick out a tape. Dude, what are we listening to, right? We're on a road trip to a show. And we need you to pick something out, right? Or whatever.
We're sitting shotguns, the DJ. Like,
exactly.
What do you got next? Hit me, you know, like, let's do this.
Exactly. And that was always special in the same sense, like, and this is another thing I think that often gets missed out. I know we touched briefly upon like comps, right? That labels would put out. I think a very special and unique period in the same sense that the mixtape was special. I think that mix CDs were huge. They were a huge deal.
It was the same thing. We just stopped making mix cassettes and we made mix CDs.
Exactly.
That was
huge. That was huge. Not only for, again, road trips and stuff like that, but also like exposing or sharing music with your friends. Like, or like, I remember I put together this, like, it was an A to Z mix and it was spread across like 7 or 8 CDs. And it was basically 2 tracks from artists and it was from A to Z. So I picked like, and I know that sounds a little bizarre, but like,
that's awesome.
That's how I did
that's
it.
Awesome.
It was just, it was time consuming to make, but it was so much fun to do that because, you know, you're going through your cassettes. You're going, because I did it on CD. It's like you're going basically through your media library. What can I put onto here and why am I putting it onto here? And I just, I don't know. Like,
you're curating.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? You're curating. You know? Like, and I mean, I guess you could say that for people that make a playlist now, but like, it's not exactly the same.
No. For me personally, GBH has always been one of those bands, especially based on when they came up through the records that they were putting out. I have a love for that band, and I'm wondering, I know that you were fortunate enough to play a gig with them in 2018, and just again, this is kind of a rapid fire. I'm curious, what was the crowd like did GBH sound good live? You know, do they still have the energy? Were they still fucking tight? Because I've seen some footage and it's been like hit or, you know, it seems like it's good, but I can't tell because it's through a fucking phone or whatever. But like, you know, tell me a little bit about that gig. Like, how fucking psyched were you to get that opportunity? You know, were you able to meet the band? Just some kind of the highlights from that specific show.
So GBH rules, like, you know, they're another one that was on that huge 4CD punk comp I was talking about, that I was telling you about. Very cool guys, super cool, mellow, hung out with us, talked to us. I told them, I'm like, okay, listen, just so you know, we love you guys and we didn't rip off our name from your song. And, you know, and they laughed and it was, you know, and it was super cool. But very nice guys. Their drummer was like a riot. He was cracking me the fuck up. But all just really, really cool dudes. Really cool dudes. Very professional. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
Have it dialed in. You know, watched it. You know, with a couple of the dudes caught our set because we played first. You know, it was a 3-band show. It was us, Pinata Protest, who was also really, really good, and GBH. You know, like, talked with us, hung out, you know. When they played, they were awesome. They were tight. They were fast. They played all the hits. You know, they played every song you wanted them to play that you wanted to hear. You know, they were touring on their newest record, Momentum.
So
they they played a lot of songs from Momentum. But I mean, they played everything. They played Give Me Fire. They played
Race Against Time. Fucking
Race Against Time. City Baby Attacked by Rats.
Hell yeah. I mean,
Time Bomb, you know, I mean, they played them all. It was fucking awesome. But they sounded good. I mean, they sounded good. They were tight. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but they're not the youngest men anymore, so I can't say they were jumping off their cabinets like that. But I mean, they weren't phoning it in either. You know, they played their asses off. But it was awesome. And I mean, like, I mean, I got to see my band's name on a flyer underneath GBH. I mean, I mean, come on. You know, I was so stoked. Like, I was such an idiot. I was so lame. I'm like, oh my fucking God.
No, that's badass.
Oh my fucking God, dude. We get to play with GBH. That's so fucking cool, you know?
That's badass. Because
I'm remembering watching old punk and disorderly VHS tapes I had of them playing live when I was a teenager. And now I'm sitting here talking to the fucking their singer Colin, like, mm-hmm. And it's cool, you know, like, so very, just a really cool experience. Super cool guys. Definitely one I'll never forget for sure.
That's awesome.
And it was a good crowd. It was a lot of fun. A lot of our friends came out and stuff like that. A lot of people commuted, a lot of people that don't really go to very many shows anymore. That was the one they came out to, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? So very grateful to have played that show. That was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
So basically, if they're coming through and you get a chance to see them, just go do it. Just go see GBH.
Yeah.
Just go see GBH. It's a good time.
Tell the individuals listening, kind of let them know where they can, you know, find your music, you know, keep up to date with all the social media nonsense. Just let people know where they can kind of find out a little bit more about the band.
Awesome. Yeah. We are Cry Havoc with an exclamation point at the end. We're from New Britain, Connecticut, hard hitting New Britain, or soft kitten New Britain, however you want to look at it. We're on Instagram, Cry Havoc _band. We're on Facebook. I am on Twitter, which is kind of basically Cry Havoc being on Twitter. The best way to find us on the social media is if you see some other Cry Havocs, just look for everything being written in caps lock, because I am super obnoxious and that's how you know it's Cry Havoc. Everything's in caps lock. But yeah, we're on there. We have a YouTube channel. We have a couple music videos that we have up on there and some live footage and stuff. We're also on Spotify. Our entire discography is up there, which is 4 records, starting first one, I think Preparation for Conquest was 2007. So we have 4 full length records on there. A couple songs from a split 7-inch we did with the Lost Riots are up there also. Yeah, we're pretty good with our social media. I try to keep everything updated and what's happening and stuff. We also have a Big Cartel online store where we have CDs and a 7-inch and t-shirts and decals and pins and all that kind of stuff. Right now, we're kind of, we kind of usually hibernate over the winter because shows are kind of at a premium, you know, with the weather and stuff
like
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, like, as I say that, as it was like 50 and 60 degrees down here like 2 weeks ago, but whatever, that's neither here nor there.
It was insane. But,
I know, dude, so ridiculous. But yeah, so right now, our bass player, John Lee, Papa John, as he's called now, just became a dad. So he's doing the dad thing. Yeah.
Nice.
He's doing the dad thing. And we're kind of just laying low for a little bit where we, before the lockdown really hit, we were just getting started on writing some new music and stuff. So we're going to be getting back to that hopefully next month.
Nice.
And we're just going to start writing, hopefully get a new record done at some point. And hopefully in 2022, we're going to do our absolute best to make up for the lost year that was 2020.
Yeah.
And play a whole bunch of shows. And I hope we get to play some shows with Working Class, because I think that that would be an absolute fucking blast.
I very much agree. I have some ideas, and again, we can kind of put our heads together. I've got some ideas as well. I'd like to make come together and materialize. My last question, essentially, you've listened to the show, you probably have an idea for how this works. I really like the track, No More Wasted Time. It's off the 2019 album, Deed Left Unpunished. I really like it a lot because it's got that kind of cheeky guitar lead, right? It's a guitar lead melody, mid-tempo drive. It's a good fucking bubble. I don't know how to say, it's not like a bubbly song, but it's a great punk song. It's great. And I wanted to talk to you specifically about, you know, being in bands. I feel like it's very easy for members to feel like they're wasting their time. Right. Things aren't going as fast as they want them to. That's not moving in the direction they'd like, as quick as they'd like it to. So I'm wondering from your experience, how do you handle feelings of doubt, feelings of wasting time when it comes to Cry Havoc and possibly some, you know, some of the other projects that you may or may not have been part of? How do you kind of handle that?
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, thank you for the kind words on the song. You'd probably appreciate that. When we were writing that, when Jesse, our lead guitar player, he kind of put together the little melody, because we were like, yeah, let's do, like, we kind of got the song. It's kind of like a mid-tempo weed one, because we don't want everything to just be fast, fast, fast. So he kind of came up with that, like, let's do like a cool melody, like a little, like, not a solo, but like a cool melody. And he kind of put that one together, and we appropriate before I finished the lyrics and had a name for the song, we just called that the Screeching Weasel song.
Dude, that's exactly what it is.
To me, that little weed sounds like something I would have heard off Boogada Boogada Boogada. I'm like, dude, this is a straight up Screeching Weasel.
Exactly.
Like, riff.
I love it. Awesome. I love it.
So we call that the Screeching Weasel riff or song before we titled it. I mean, we... We have done this band since 2006. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I kind of talk to when I talk to bands or newer bands or whatever, and they're like, oh man, you guys have been going for so long, blah, 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 blah. When we first started, I was given a piece of advice by somebody from another band, and it really resonated with me. He told me, it's a marathon, not a race.
Mm.
And that really stuck with me, because I think I can't really say there's a secret to our success, because, I mean, how do you judge success in a hardcore band, right? You know? But I think one of the things that's really just contributed to our tenure, our run we've had, is the patience. I see just a lot of bands, and not just bands, but, you know, people at jobs or their art or their craft or whatever they might be doing. People just want so much so fast, you know? And I see that a lot with bands. You see a lot of bands, and I mean, I'm sure you see it too all the time. You see a band, they get together, they do a demo, they put out a 7-inch, they play a bunch of shows, and they break up.
Yeah. And, oh, I mean, that's the life cycle, right?
Right. You know? And I don't know if that's kind of just kind of that mentality is just kind of uploaded into the general thinking that that's just what you do, Or maybe that's just the band. They're like, hey, listen, I'm going to move in a couple years because I'm here for college. Let's just put out a 7-inch, play some shows, and that's all I want. And that's cool. If that's, you know, the plan, then that's cool. Do your thing. But I would just, I would see a lot of bands that were just like, get together and do all the stuff and make the merch and do the 7-inch or EP or whatever, and just be like, well, why aren't we playing that show? Or why are we playing second? We you know what I mean? Like this and that. It's just like, dude, like, give it time.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta, you know, we've been playing for almost 15 years, and you know what? Sometimes we still play first.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we play first, it's to an empty room. It happens. And do we get mad about it? Do we're like, oh, well, we got to start a new band? No. Because you might play last at the next show, and you might play to a full house. Who knows?
Exactly.
You know, for us, it's really just that kind of that patience and the ebb and the flow. And you've seen, and I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, those ups and downs, those ebbing tides with scenes. You know what I mean? People age out of the scene or punk or whatever, or you have to get jobs and become parents and get careers, and they can't go to shows. And you also see that influx of younger people coming in. So we've seen in those ups and downs, and venues close and venues open, and bands break up, and record labels start, and record distros come along, and this and that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's really just the patience. And for us, it was, I mean, we really had no intention when we started this band of being like, we should try to get signed to a cool label and tour. You know, when we started this band, we were all kind of older. You know, I was already a dad and stuff. It was like, listen, I can't, I'm not 19. We're all not 19 years old. We can't quit our shitty job, put our stuff in our parents' basement and just go tour. You know what I mean? That was never, you know, that was never really an option for us. So we were kind of just like, let's just write some music, release stuff, and play as many shows as we can and just have fun. And that's kind of always just the mentality for us. And that's always what's worked for us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say a lot of things is also to set attainable goals. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think sometimes people just try to want too much too fast, and they, in a way, might set themselves up for failure. And then when it doesn't work out, they just get disillusioned, right. You know?
Right.
So I try to tell bands, I'm like, listen, like, don't phone it in. Don't half-ass it. You know, give everything 100%, you know, but no, set expectations that you can achieve.
Sure.
You know, and or maybe are a little higher, so you really have to work for it. But you know what? Sometimes it doesn't work out, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's okay. But it's whatever you're doing, have fun with it. Don't make this work. You know, because for me, this is, it's therapy. I call it punk rock therapy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I go out on stage, I scream, I yell, I bash the microphone against my head, and I feel good afterwards. And that's that. You know, so it's like, this is where I'm supposed to go and have fun and blow up some steam and leave the show feeling lifted and better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So have fun with it. Don't make this, why would you put all this work and time and money into something you're just going to end up resenting it? Because, you know what I mean? Because you put so much pressure on yourself, mm-hmm. You know? Have fucking fun.